Welcome to Audio 6 of Discovery-Oriented Conversational Process, inspired by Janella Bird. I am Josephine Stanton. The text of this audio is on the website https://talkthatheals.org/. This sixth audio describes the point of difference number 5, which focuses on relational externalizing, that is, conceptualizing and describing everyone and everything in relation to everything and everyone else, including moments in time. It involves quite a shift, especially for people who've grown up in westernized, individually focused cultures, people like me. For example, the sense of desolation you felt as you saw your daughter walk away. This description centralizes the experience, desolation, is separate from and connected to the person. It places it in the context of the relationship with her daughter and a moment in time. The detail in the description supports the person to connect with being in the experience. The separation supports reflection, moving out of the experience and looking in on it. I'll say it again. The sense of desolation you felt as you saw your daughter walk away. Another example might be the furious rage you experienced as you heard your partner accept an invitation to watch the game. In contrast, ordinary language tends to identify the person with the problem, often using binaries and absolutes. Some examples might be, I am depressed, he is violent, she is dependent. Traditional externalizing was an important innovation by early narrative therapists like Michael White and David Epstein. It separates the problem from the person as if the problem has a separate agency, a life of its own. For example, what sort of effect does depression have on your life? How did hitting get into this family? When did the stealing start? How has that sneaky poo got into your pants? It is pretty crafty. Using traditional externalizing, the therapist and family members can engage with the person to address the problem. It is especially helpful with young children. With issues open to judgment, it can reduce experiences of blame and shame. It has been moved into institutionalized mental health care in evidence-based treatments as evidence-based treatment of obsessive-compulsive disorder in children. It's also widely used by people working with anorexia nervosa. For example, is that you or the anorexia talking? Did that mean OCD make you use up all the hot water again, even though you didn't want the family to run out of hot water? Me, your mum, your dad and your sister, we are all on the team to help you get that OCD out of your life so that you can choose when to turn off the shower and get into doing all the things you want to do. Relational externalizing is an innovation developed by Janella. It places the issue in relation to the person in context. Here are some more examples. The suicidal feelings you experienced as you walked away from your friends. The guilt and self-hate you experienced after you told your grandmother you did not care about her. The desperation and confusion you felt when you learned your son had taken an overdose after you had had such a good day together. The shift to using language in this way can look a bit clunky when written, but it doesn't seem to feel like that to the person. Like traditional externalizing, it creates space between the person and the problem, but it puts the feeling or idea in relation to the person. The person has an opportunity to experience themselves as an active I, having the experience that is of me, but not the whole of me. Relational language has the potential to free us from black and white or all or nothing thinking, enables us to shift from a deficit-focused view to engage in possibility and to use imagination as a therapeutic resource. In contrast to the black and white thinking or all or nothing binary thinking of ordinary language, relational externalizing helps us find language for the in-between. Binaries or absolute descriptions are common in ordinary language, but they don't do justice to the complexity and richness of our experiences. Consider these examples. I am a good mother versus I am a bad mother. I am a confident person versus I lack confidence. I have good self-esteem versus I have poor self-esteem. I am a good clinician versus I am a bad clinician. A binary allows only two positions, the valued and the not valued. It is rare for anyone fully to belong at either extreme, and neither is a great place to be. No one wants to be on the negative end of a binary, but being on the positive end is precarious. If you fail, even once, to keep up the high standard required by the valued place in the binary, what is left? If I am seen as a good rather than a bad clinician, does that mean that with one error of judgment, I stop being a good clinician and become a bad clinician? How can someone offer me formative feedback if identifying something I might do better could imply I am not a good clinician? Once I move out of binary thinking, I can hold my sense of value as a clinician, even if I become aware of a situation where I was not able to contribute. I can reflect, consult, and explore how I can develop and enrich the skills and knowledge I bring to the role. In comparison to absolute binary descriptions, relational language allows a richer, more detailed level of description. For example, the confidence you showed in leading the team through the new exercise, the valuing of yourself as a likable person you continued to hold when going to the new school, even when the other kids did not initially invite you into their friendship groups, the good mothering you showed when you managed the intense feelings you experienced and stayed calm, supporting your daughter through the painful procedure. Whatever lapses in confidence, loss of self-esteem, or not good enough mothering that may happen at another time, these events have happened and cannot be cancelled out. Consider the contrast with black and white descriptors such as a good mother, a confident person, or being someone with high self-esteem. We can explore the context and use relational language to shift a totalizing black and white response. For example, I am hopeless might shift into the pattern of setting high goals for yourself and pushing your limits has worked well for you in many situations. It matters a lot to you to do the best you possibly can. However, you sometimes find yourself taking on more than you can manage. In trying to achieve the impossible, you have found yourself falling short. In the process of becoming aware of falling short, you are finding it impossible to hold any sense of your abilities and become overwhelmed by a sense of hopelessness. Relational language can help us move away from a deficit-focused approach. Take the attribute of confidence as an example. Everyone displays some confidence in some context, even if only in everyday tasks, such as brushing teeth or buttering toast. Conversely, it would be unusual to find someone who displayed confidence in every situation. Consider a conversation about the confidence you showed when, in comparison to a conversation about being a confident person or not. Here's some examples. Is there anything good enough about the parenting that you do that the Child Protection Agency hasn't noticed? The anxiety that you are describing when you are under pressure at work and when you meet new people, are there times when it doesn't affect you? Relational language also allows us to recruit imagination as a therapeutic resource. What the person can imagine is likely to be more connected to their life than something we suggest. For example, what would this family be like if the children did what parents asked some of the time? If this fear your baby will die, which keeps coming into your mind, started to change, what would be the first sign? This judgment you are making of the parenting that you do, if you were to put it aside, what would be different? If you thought it was possible to develop some trust in this relationship, what would it be like? What would you hope for? What would be different? If you were to be the nurse, OT, social worker you really wanted to be, what would you be doing? If your koro, grandfather, were here, sitting over there, what would he be thinking? What might he say? Relational language is important in summarizing themes in conversations. The detail in the description supports the person to connect to the experience. The space created around the experience and describing the context support the person to look in on the experience. This not only protects against losing what has gone before in the conversation, but holds it with richness. It provides a multifaceted platform to negotiate the ongoing focus of the conversation. Summarizing in this way requires a therapist to write careful notes as the person is speaking. A fictional example. I want to stop and collect up some of the threads of the conversation. We have covered a lot of ground. We have talked about the longing you have to be connected with your daughter and the desire you hold to be present as a mum for her. We have also talked about the sacrifices you have decided to make to support this. You have described the desperate emptiness you experienced when you lost touch with her and the hurt you experience now when she pulls away from you. We have also talked about the experience you have of being alone, just me in all this. Does that cover the central issues? In my own life, personal and professional, I find relational externalizing a helpful strategy for processing the blame and shame I feel when I have not met the standards I hold for myself. This is an example where I have not attended as well as I might to someone at work. I am noticing feeling burdened with unhelpful self-recrimination about not having listened particularly attentively to X. Nothing terrible happened, but I might have been more helpful if I'd taken more time and trouble. They have not had the best I could do. In the context of being tired at the end of a long day, wanting to get home to my family, I made a choice to do only what was necessary. The values I hold which supported this choice include taking care of myself and being psychologically available to my family. This choice is of me, but not all of me. As I describe this experience in a relational way, I notice a change from aversive self-recrimination to sadness that was all I felt I could manage. This is the end of Audio 6 describing relational externalizing. Thank you for listening. Feedback and ideas are welcome on info@talkthatheals.org.